Valley of Dry Bones. Boy, that figures, doesn't it? You can't even get, can we have moist bones? A valley of moist bones? A valley of bones where you could possibly stick your finger into the marrow and detect some sort of past life? No, not for God. This isn't the way God operates. It's the Valley of Dry Bones, because everything has to be disgustingly hopeless and helpless before He works. And isn't that your life? Hi, everyone. Martin Zender. This is the Revelation series. And I'm doing this by way of introduction to the Valley of Dry Bones, which I will not talk about today. I refuse to talk about the Valley of Dry Bones today of Ezekiel 37. Speaking of God bringing back Israel, including the 144,000, to their land, which is not 1948. It's still future. And we're going to discuss that luxuriously, and I dare say eloquently and thoroughly. But for today, I'm going to talk about God not being up for re-election. I was thinking about this over the weekend, this whole thing of this Valley of Dry Bones. That phrase just kept reverberating, dry bones, dry bones. Then it hit me, dry bones. They have to be so totally dead. Not just dead, but ultra dead. Kind of like the blind guy that the Lord healed. What does he do? He tells him to put mud on his eyes. Why does he do that? Because he's making it even more impossible than it was before. He doubles down on it. He's going to make it ridiculous. Elijah with his altar on Mount Carmel against the prophets of Baal. What does Elijah do? He makes it harder for himself by dousing his altar with water. The God, they challenge their gods to bring fire down on their altars. So the prophets of Baal probably, you know, made their altars as dry as possible. I don't know how they do that. Blow it with air, whatever, dry it up. Elijah, the opposite. Yeah, he just douses it with water. Likewise, Jesus putting mud over the dude's eyes. Likewise, Abraham. We're not just going to wait until he sort of can't do it. We're going to wait till he's 100 years old and definitely can't do it. And the same with the matrix of Sarah. Deaden it. We're going to deaden it. And isn't this happening in your life? It seems ridiculous. And this is the problem many of us have with evil, is that it's overkill. God, it's too much. Stop already. We get the point. How many times have you said that about your own life? All right, I got it. I got it. Quit with the, can I get a breather now? Can you quit with the trials? No. They keep coming crazier and crazier. I have a friend in Amarillo and another friend in Fresno, California, who are both going through these terrible physical abilities, and it just seems like God is adding to them. Instead of giving them a break, He's adding stuff to it. It's like, why? When are you going to stop? And He doesn't, because He knows what He's doing. It's easy for me to say. No, it's really not. It's not easy for me to say. I'm 55 years old. I've been through some stuff. And it's not easy to say. And then I look at David and Goliath. What a great analogy there. What does God do? He's in the business right now of increasing the contrasts. He's making Goliath bigger and stronger, doubling down on the dude's armor, giving him extra protection. What does he do to David? Well, King Saul tries to load David up in the valley against the giant of the Philistines, Goliath, and tries to get him his armor. Put this armor on David. David says, I don't want any armor. So he strips down probably to a loincloth. I wouldn't be surprised. And so we got this, and of course, Goliath has to be 9 foot freaking nine. Can't just be a big guy. No, he's got to be 9 foot freaking nine. And David has to be, at least make David a man, a normal size. No, no, that's not the way God operates. We're going to make David a teenager. Yeah, that's the good one. And, okay, at least give the kid a spear. No, that's not ridiculous enough. We're going to give David a slingshot. Well, at least David has 5 stones. Yeah, but we're only going to need one. It's like, how many? I could go on all day drawing these contrasts. And the contrast I always make with David and Goliath and myself is that the organized religion has millions and millions of dollars at their disposal, and God makes them bigger and stronger and more influential in the earth by the day. He gives them political alliances. He gives them money, jets, you name it. And what does he do? He strips us down. He strips me down. He gives me enough to operate by, but you know, I mean, the analogy here is ridiculous. It's David and Goliath. And this only comforts me when I realize, here's the big thing. Are you ready? David wins. Yeah, that's the end of that story. David wins every time. Elijah beat the prophets of Baal, even with his wet altar. He kicked their asses, and then he slaughtered them. David, with his little loincloth and slingshot, destroyed Goliath. Killed him, chopped off his head. Nice. Nice touch at the end. Same with Elijah. Nice touch at the end. You don't just, you know, beat the prophets of Baal. You slaughter them. That's nice. And then David, of course, cuts the head off of Goliath, puts it on a pole, and advertises it. Great stuff. Abraham, same thing. Abraham wins. Desperate man. He has a son. Sarah, desperate woman. So desperate, she tells Abraham to go into her handmaiden. That's literal, go into. And out comes Isaac. Same with you right now and me. And we have to trust that this is the case. It's not that God hasn't given us examples beforehand, because he has. So to my friend in Amarillo, and to my friend in Fresno, and to all of you out there who are suffering with relatives, children, parents, friends, your health, frustrations, God's going to make it crazier yet. But it's not that it's not like he hasn't done it before. So I comfort you with, again, God's big, fat, hairy, glorious, predictable rut. God's in a rut. And the rut he's in is that he's always making it harder before he delivers. And if God were up for re-election, now I figured out one day, 15 years ago, why there's one God. Because if there were two gods, capital G gods, two gods, two literal capital G gods, and they were running against each other in an election. And we had this God we're dealing with, who thinks the cross was necessary, who thinks the Holocaust was necessary, who thinks World War II was necessary, who thinks your bum hip was necessary, who thinks that the death of your child was necessary, who thinks that the death of your parents was necessary. If this God was running against another capital G God, who would say, this is the other God running against the one God. But in this case, my analogy, please indulge me here. We have two capital G gods. The one says, sorry, I can't bring us to the consummation of all. I can't bring us to this ultimate happiness without World War II, without the crucifixion, without your bum hip. All this stuff's necessary. The other capital G God says, I can bring us to the same consummation, to the same joy, happiness, peace. I can do it without the crucifixion, without your bum hip. I can do it, you know, without the murder, the bloodshed, the trials, the trauma. And if both these gods were up for an election and they were campaigning, look, be honest with yourself. You would vote for the God who could bring us to the same end with less crap, right? Wouldn't you? Anybody would. And God knows this. God knows that he is not very popular emotionally, soulishly. He knows that he does hard stuff and that many of us would be tempted to just bail out of his ridiculous plan. And it does seem ridiculous sometimes. Overkill. Man, it's overkill. But is it? No. But he knows that if there were a competing deity, that we of soulish nature would vote for that other deity if they could both bring us to the same consummation. Of course. Who wants a hard route in life? You can get to the same place by an easier way. We all want the easier way in our flesh, don't we? Of course we do. Don't lie to yourself. You don't order your own trials. Yeah, I think I'll break my leg today. You know, I want to be in a car accident today. Yeah, I want my child to go through a horrifying divorce. Let's order that up. That should really develop my character. No, you're not that stupid. God imposes these things on you, and then we have to learn to trust and accept. And the reason there's only one God is that God knows that we would go fast and hard for the alternate candidate. Yeah, of the no trial party. That's what it would be. The NTP, the no trial party. I'd be a proponent of that party. I'd be a badge-wearing, flag-waving member of that party. I would support that party. And I would vote for the God who could get us to the same end. But we have to deal with this one. That's why there's only one. And so you're forced. That's why God constantly says, I am the only God. I am one God. I am Yahweh. I do everything. Get it? I am Yahweh. There is no other. There's none other besides me. Destroy all your idols. All your false deities are false. I'm the only true potentate, the only absolute deity. So you have to deal with me. And so that's what we like surrendered to him. It's like, okay, well, since we don't have any other choice, I guess we'll go with you. And we'll have to learn all the crap we have to learn because we have no alternative. Because by God, if we had an alternative, we would go for it. You see in my point here, that's why there's one God. That's why there's one God. Because he knows we'd go for the other one, okay? So there's one God. So you have to deal with this one. So it's then easier, really, I think, not to wham-wham. But it's so difficult for people to accept the sovereignty of God that they create this dichotomy. They create an alternate God, and they call him Satan. He's the God who does everything bad. You've created exactly the situation that I facetiously put forward to you today. You've created an alternative deity because you can't handle the fact that God does everything. So in fact, there has been an election for you people who think that Satan is a God of evil and God is the God of good. You have actually voted in another deity. You've made Satan co-deity with God the Father. That's what you've done. And that's despicable to me. That's disgusting. I repudiate it. Or as Daffy Duck would say, I repudiate it. So it's not even an option for us of faith. And we must believe and must trust that there is one God. Satan is a sub-being. He serves the ultimate God. Doesn't know it. He's being used by the absolute deity. And he is used as a means for the absolute deity to work through an intermediary. But for those of us who have come into maturity, we no longer struggle. Well, okay, we do struggle with it, but we accept the fact that God does hard things, that he's bringing us to faith, to maturity, and he's bringing many sons to glory, and he does this through the same type of suffering that he brought his son through. Are we his servants and slaves any better than his firstborn son, Jesus Christ? No. Well, definitely not. So if we see Christ being perfected through sufferings, then we too are perfected through sufferings by the hand, the loving hand, of the one and the only God.